Well, last night didn't go well. Welcome into the program, Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN. Oh, we have a lot to get to on the program today and break down where a lot of people are going to be eating their own words. And I'm going to tell you exactly why that's the case coming up. And this is a great lesson in which to not write a team off until it's absolutely positively done. You know, it's kind of crazy, and this happens all the time in sports. Oh, they have no chance. You know, oh, hey, down 3-1, no chance. I heard that so many times yesterday. I heard dead team. I heard all these different things, and there was a part of me yesterday that was just incredibly cautious about uttering anything of, hey, it's a guarantee the Pacers go into Milwaukee tomorrow night and win, tonight and win, been referencing kind of how we spoke about it yesterday. Because if you look at this series, okay, if you look at this series, you have game one, you got blown out. Game two was tight heading into the fourth quarter. Then you had a massive run and won in runaway fashion. Game three went to freaking overtime. And then game four, you just shot the lights out. So it's not exactly like the Pacers have just demoralized the Milwaukee Bucks. They've stomped on them. They've won by 15-plus in every game they played in. I mean, yeah, in a couple of those games, but at the same time, when you look at the context of it all, it's been way closer than it's been publicized. Way closer. And you just have to think, when a team has had so much thrown at them like Milwaukee has, with Giannis and Damian Lillard and all the different things that have happened, Bobby Portis goes out with his own ridiculousness, that you just sense that the team's going to fight. You don't know what it is, but you just have a sense that they're going to fight. Now, quarter one looked pretty good for Indiana. It did, and then second quarter's where it got a little bit wonky, and you went into halftime feeling fortunate to be down five, and then it all kind of came unraveled in the third quarter. And, you know, you could chalk this up to this team saying, this is kind of what this team has done all year. Right? They've had stretches of looking like the second best team in the Eastern Conference. Like, right now, the second best team in the Eastern Conference from a seed standpoint is the New York Knicks, and I had already heard conversation nationally about how the Pacers are a bad matchup for the Knicks. Well, guess what happened last night? The game before the Pacers and Bucks played, the Knicks faltered away an opportunity to close out their series. Okay? That happened in overtime. And then you come into last night's game and people are like, oh, hey, breath of fresh air. You know, hey, you win tonight. You get a little rest and the Knicks come in. Like, you're looking too far ahead. This is a young team. This is an inexperienced team. And it's so easy to jump ahead and say, all right, yeah, you're going to close it down in five. And then you worry about what's next way too ahead of it. Way too ahead of it. And I think we alluded to it yesterday. I don't want it, I told you so. I don't want to have this conversation today, okay? I would have liked the Pacers to close out last night, like all of you would have loved the Pacers to close out last night. You know what the best part of my night was last night? I got 40 minutes extra sleep. Because by the end of the third quarter, it was over. It was. I mean, the ridiculousness of that game started at 9:30 at night. Don't even get me started. That's the least of the worries of last night. But that was the best part of my night last night. It absolutely was. But every other part of last night kind of sucked, right? It wasn't very fun, right? I mean, to see Patrick Beverley in his ultimate ridiculousness score 12 points in the second quarter, like, that's inexcusable. Bobby Portis goes off for 29 in an I-told-you-so game after he gets ejected in game number four. Like, there were so many moments that just flat-out sucked last night for a lot of different reasons. But, you know, there's a lot of talkers on that team. There's a lot of pomp and circumstance with that team because they aren't afraid to say anything or do anything. But you gave them a platform. You gave them a platform. You got beat by a lineup that had the starting lineup be Patrick Beverley and Malik Beasley in the backcourt, Chris Middleton and Bobby Portis in the frontcourt with Brooke Lopez at center. All five of those guys scored in double figures. But I'm going to go back to this, okay? And this is not to let the Indiana Pacers off the hook, but I'll say, we talked about all year long. We talked about it heading up to the play-in tournament. Had the Pacers been a 7, 8, 9, 10 seed to get their spot in the NBA playoffs, that it was the worst-case scenario for them because they just don't play well against teams in the middle of the road. And guess what? That starting lineup for Milwaukee last night was like playing the Chicago Bulls or playing the Miami Heat without Jimmy Butler. Like, I mean, they struggle against those teams. They struggle against the teams that they should flat out handle. We went through their schedule at one point during the season, and you just shake your head at some of the losses they had. Like, losses or tough moments against Detroit, against the Wizards, against the Charlotte Hornets, against just middling teams. Toronto, I mean, I guess Toronto's a perfect example of this starting lineup for Milwaukee. You're making Chris Middleton look like one of the best five shooting guards in the NBA. Like, they have not been good defensively. I mean, really, their shot-making has overcome everything else. And if you look at last night, folks, the offense wasn't the issue. It really wasn't the issue, to be honest with you. Now, you normally don't score 92 points. I get that. You normally don't score 92 points. You're usually in the triple digits. That's typically what you've done. And oftentimes when you get up there, you know, Milwaukee with their lack of ability to score the basketball, can't really play with you. But golly, some of those one-on-one defensive assignments last night, that was glaring. That was troublesome. I mean, it really was from a 1-5 standpoint, from a defensive side of things. The Pacers were terrible last night. They were. And, you know, I think people got used to, hey, the Pacers hit 23 threes in game four. That's the norm. Well, here's what they did last night. The Pacers hit 6 threes in the first quarter. In the final 3 quarters, they had a grand total of 6 the rest of the way. They weren't good offensively last night, but to me, that wasn't the worry. All year long, it's been defensively. And if you're telling me one-on-one, you can't handle Bobby Portis, one-on-one, you can't handle Malik Beasley, I mean, that is troublesome. It absolutely is. So again, I don't want to make too much of this particular game in isolation. Like, last night kind of played out in the two scenarios that you'd kind of think. Like, either Milwaukee was going to come out with fire saying, we are not going to get eliminated tonight, which kind of from a Will standpoint, that's what they did. Because Patrick Beverley hadn't been a factor. Malik Beasley hasn't been a factor. Bobby Portis really hasn't been a factor. He wasn't even a factor in the first couple games of the series when Damian Lillard was playing. But in this case, they were factors, but it's glaring to say from a one-on-one matchup standpoint that the Pacers couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle those one-on-one matchups. Beverly was getting to the lane. Middleton was a problem. The Pacers got eaten up inside. They were out-rebounded by 8, but I just thought defensively it was very lackluster. I really thought it was. Now, if you want a silver lining, if you're a Pacers fan, here's where you get it, okay? Pacers have always responded well. You've heard them multiple times. And you won probably the two most difficult games in the series. Game 2 after you lose game 1, coming home for game 3 where, you know, you have to set the tone for your homestand. And you got both of those, and then you won game 4, so you're up 3-1. You had some wiggle room for air. Now, I don't think anybody had last night the Pacers losing by 23. I think that if you're looking at it in totality, okay, you could have seen the Pacers lose last night. Now, there's many people nationally that say, oh my gosh, there's no way they lose. Bring on the Knicks. That's why you don't do that, man. Tell you. This is why you don't do that, because Milwaukee's got pride too, and now is the waiting game of who for Milwaukee is available in game number 6. And by the way, guess who the pressure's back on? The Indiana Pacers. You know, last night there was pressure on Milwaukee, and they stepped to the plate. They did. Because if Milwaukee got beaten in this series 4-1, that is an indictment on Milwaukee nationally more so than it is about how good the Indiana Pacers are. That's the story, because they have the star power with Giannis and Damian Lillard. Now, it is shifted back to Indiana. You go home for game 6, you are expected to win. Expected to win. And if you lose back-to-back games against this supporting cast, oh boy. And, you know, I don't want to preview anything coming up, but golly, if this goes 7 games, folks, I mean, whew, what has been such a promising season, we're going to have a lot of different conversations, folks. But that's fair. I mean, to look at it the way you're looking at it right now, last night was a complete and utter dud. It was. I don't think anybody really played well. You know, pretty much everybody that was on the floor from a plus-minus standpoint was minus. There wasn't anybody that was minus. And so, look, I'm going to look at it a lot of different ways, but I'm going to bring this up again. The concern level that I have is defensively. I just thought defensively was extremely glaring, and you can overlook those things when you're making shots and you're winning basketball games. Because if you really think about game 4, you know, I got so tired of the national broadcast. I got to be honest with you on that. Watching the TNT broadcast and the praise that Milwaukee was getting every time they cut a 9-point lead to 6. I mean, it was like the movie Hoosiers. I mean, it seriously was like, oh my gosh, they're not expected to be here. This is ridiculous. Oh my gosh! And then the Pacers pulled away at the end. But if you go back to Game 4. You could really have some concerns level of the defense, because at the end of the day, Milwaukee was making shots to kind of hang around, and it had to do with your lack of defense. It really did. Like, I don't know about you guys. Like, last night, I'm sure most, because you're conditioned to talk about the offensive side of the basketball game always, and who didn't score and who scored. Like, oh my gosh, Pascal Siakam had 12 points. Tyrese Haliburton only had 16. That's easy. Like, anybody can do that, okay? So let's really get to the root of the issue. The root of the issue was defensively. It has been, it will be, and you got to figure out a way where you're just a little bit better. Like, you don't have to be the best defensive team in the world. But golly, if Malik Beasley and Bobby Portis are beating you one-on-one, who cares what's next? You're going to have problems. And if your system is only predicated on when you make shots, you play well, it ain't going to work. I'm just telling you. I know, and I've said it before on this program many times, the offensive side leads to the defensive side. So the two are interconnected, because when you make shots, you can set up your defense, you can match up in the backcourt, which the Pacers love to throw a guard and harass the ball, you know, the initiator of the offense coming up the floor and all those different things. It's a little different when you miss the shot. And they get it off the rebound, they get it to the ball handler, and guys are streaking in transition, and you've got one-on-one matchups. I mean, It was glaring last night. Just how different this team is. It sounds remedial, but compared to making shots and compared to not making shots. And the Pacers weren't making shots last night, and their defense absolutely crumbled. Crumbled. And, you know, Rick Carlisle was trying to do all he could with the momentum changing timeouts and all the different staggering of things that they could do and whatever the case may be. I just thought it was a complete dud. And, you know, you hope it's just a blip in the radar and you say, oh, you know, you come home and you close it out. And, oh, hey, well, it was funny how we were talking about all those things in Game 5. You know, well, but you lose it. Man, things get a little tight. And then you really see young, inexperienced team in a Game 7. I mean, it's not that far-fetched, folks. It's not. Pacers-Bucks tomorrow night, 6:30, Gamebridge Fieldhouse. I mean, it's a more must-win for the Pacers than it is the Bucks. It's weird to say that. I mean, it absolutely is. But you can't explain being up 3-1 and it going to 7 games. You just can't explain it. Especially, you know, the way that you can do things offensively that Milwaukee cannot do. They don't have the personnel for it. They don't. They don't have the personnel at all. So, it was a crazy night last night. But, hey, I'm a little fresher because I got 35, 40 minutes extra sleep last night. So, hey, we're feeling good. We're feeling spry. Yeah, let's go. I mean, that's the fact of the matter, folks. Look, I don't want to have this conversation, but we got to be real. Let's stop the whole looking ahead. Pacers got it in the bag. Bucks are broken. You know, all those different things. You just can't do that until the series is over. You just can't do that. I know it's easy to look on paper. I know it's like, oh, come on. Their best player's Bobby Portis. Oh, come on. Chris Middleton's going to be. But a game went to overtime in game three. Okay? It took a ridiculous fourth quarter for you to win game two. I mean, Milwaukee was right there with you. You have not beaten up this team in this series. I mean, you've outplayed them, but that's different than walking all over them. It ain't even close. It ain't even a contest. You've broken them. I don't see that. So my analysis compared to other analysis, then so be it. I mean, you can have your own opinions. I never thought that this was an easy win in game number five. Now, others felt that way. Others were, rolling out the red carpet for the New York Knicks. Others were preparing for Saturday at 7 o'clock at night that game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals was going to begin. No, I wasn't doing that. I don't know what you were doing. I mean, I think we were hopeful that that was the case, but, you know, on this program, on this talk show, no, we don't do that until it's over. Because how many times have we gotten to this point, and boy, oh boy, if the Bucks play well tomorrow night, I mean, whew, that could be dicey. It absolutely could. So, obviously we talked about the adjustments the Pacers have made. I think Milwaukee has defended so much better over the last two games. They've done a great job on Pascal Siakam because really the bailout in game one, game two was let Siakam work the middle of the floor. And, you know, if he hits the mid-range jumper, great. If he gets to the rim, great. But, you know, Milwaukee has decided to shut that down. And really, okay with kind of playing the on-ball defense sort of approach with the three-point shooters. But what it's taken away is the way that Siakam can walk the lane and can walk the middle of the floor and can catch and turn and rip and go one-on-one with the big, because it's not even a contest with Siakam. So he has really had to adjust, because I was kind of waiting for that approach in last night's game, because even in game one, when you got blown out, that was there. In game two, we obviously saw that with a career performance that he had. But really, ever since that point, you know, you've been relying on the perimeter shot. And I kind of wonder if Milwaukee, after game four, said, you know what, there is no way, there is zero chance the Pacers drop 23 threes again. You know, as crazy as that sounds, and as well as the Pacers shot the basketball, you know, I kind of sit there and I subscribe to maybe what Milwaukee thought. Hey, guys, write that one off. That was a great shooting performance. Tip your cap. Do the same thing. There's no way that team's going to hit 23 threes again. And last night, I mean, Milwaukee was right. You know, Miles Turner was 6-for-9 from the floor, 1-for-4 from three. It just was a different night. Shots weren't falling, and when the run happened for Milwaukee, it snowballed quickly. It absolutely did. So we'll see how it plays out. I'm just curious how, you know, everything kind of plays out with the rest of the series. But in my opinion, that looms pretty large about the way that Milwaukee has handled you after you've shot the ball so well. I get that. I really do. So I don't really know. Like, you know, every game is kind of in its own microcosm, right? You sit there and you try to say, okay, what are your adjustments back? And quite frankly, I don't really know adjustment-wise what the Pacers can do to overcome last night, like defend better. How do you defend? Is that a is that just an effort thing? Like, do you just say, "Hey, you got to defend harder"? Okay, coach. Like, what do you mean? Just defend better. Like, that to me would be the adjustment. You have to be way better defensively. And I didn't have a problem with the shots last night. The shot selection, they just weren't falling. And, you know, sometimes coaches just chalk it up. Hey, shots weren't falling. But I thought effort-wise, it was fine. You know, it's – I don't know, man. Oh, goodness. It was crazy. It was a crazy night. So, all right, when we come back, we'll talk more about this. Pat Boylan, Pacers Radio, should be with us a little bit later in the show. Not sure on the exact time, but we'll try to get to that coming up. We're back after this. Yes, welcome back. Power Talk of Muncie, the new WMUN, is always presented by Walls Furniture and Mattress, Nebo Road in Muncie online, wallsfurniture.com. 90% of what's on the showroom floor in stock for you, 48 hours or less. That's the Walls Furniture and Mattress difference on Nebo Road in Muncie and online at wallsfurniture.com. I've got a tab open. Kind of looking through all of the numbers, stats, figures, all of that stuff from last night. And it has highlights of last night's 76ers Knicks game. That was wild last night. If you were watching that prior to the Pacers and the Bucks last night, I mean, Tyrese Maxey with a couple big shots, and the Knicks were literally 20 seconds away from advancing, and Philadelphia had other plans, and very similar to the Pacers-Bucks series, that one has the chance to swing as well. But, you know, nothing's guaranteed this time of the year. Like, people get so tired of hearing that cliche. But, you know, especially when we're talking about Pacers and Bucks and the roles in the series, and we talked about the weight of the world on the Bucks' shoulders and the upstart Pacers kind of being the spoilers of it all, and they were the popular pick to win this series and maybe the lowest seed to possibly upset a higher seed in the first round of really the entire NBA playoffs. But, you know, you think, okay, you win three games, well, you're guaranteed to win a fourth. It's not how it works. That's not how it works at all. Like, there's swings, ebbs, and flows, and especially when you're on the road, it's a little bit different than being at home. And so you hope, if you're Indiana, that things shift to your favor when you come back. You know, when you come back to Gainbridge Fieldhouse tomorrow night, a little bit more palpable for a start time at 6:30 tomorrow night and compared to the 9:30 stuff. That was wild. I mean, seriously. You look at 76ers and Knicks, and they played at 7:30 or 7 o'clock, and the Pacers were at 9:30 last night. I don't get it, because Milwaukee, I don't know, whatever. It is what it is. So, but last night was a dud. I mean, just a flat-out dud of a performance. So, you know, we're going to try to get Pat Boylan on from the Pacers Radio Network. He's in the middle of Fever Media Day right now. And so we hope we'll catch him here in the next 5 to 6 minutes or so so we can dive in to his thoughts last night. He watched it. He was a part of it. And, you know, again, coming home and look, if there's one silver lining, like, it's way more fun when you win a playoff series at home. But personally, I wouldn't want to extend this series anymore, because in the back of my mind is, what is Milwaukee thinking with holding out Damian Lillard and Giannis? And honestly, my thought is, are they holding him back? Are they being cautious and kind of saying, okay, we don't want to have to play them if we don't have to, because we, you know, for them to get, if this series truly was going to go five games, is the risk worth the reward to get Giannis and Damian Lillard out there? Now that you have it at game six, like, do you force the issue a little bit more? And it was described that Damian Lillard would be closer to a return than Giannis would. And clearly, you know, Damian Lillard played the first three games of the series, and the Pacers still had success. So he's added to the mix. I think the attack method for Milwaukee changes a little bit, but I still think the Pacers have a really good chance of winning that game. Now, in my opinion, it changes significantly if Giannis comes back. I mean, changes seismically if he comes back. And in the back of my mind, I kind of thought that Game 6, if it got to a Game 6, would be a perfect target date for Giannis Antetokounmpo to come back. And if that happens, I got to tell you, that changes a lot. And it's not even necessarily how effective he is, but how it changes the way that you would, I guess, strategize against Milwaukee. Like, you know, you're already focusing on Chris Middleton a lot. Chris Middleton's eating you up. You put Damian Lillard or Giannis on the floor, what are you going to do to cover Chris Middleton? He's already done great off of double teams, off of being the primary guy, and you're telling me you got two better options than him, technically? I mean, it goes back to why it's so glaring to me how bad defensively the Pacers have been, that if you bring one of those guys back, in my opinion, it obviously makes it more difficult, but it's really not as difficult from what those guys singularly in production points would provide. It's more so the attention that they take, the attention that you have to give them. Because obviously we saw Damian Lillard go off for 30 in the first half in Game 1, and the game was over by the time you hit the halftime locker room. Well, Giannis has a 60-point game against you this year. I know he hasn't played in like 3-4 weeks, but he's not a guy that, in my opinion, needs to get a rhythm. He is a physical, get-to-the-rim, smash-mouth basketball player that isn't sitting out on the three-point arc and trying to get his stroke back from deep. He's a guy that's going to really create his own off the dribble and through physicality and getting to the free throw line and wearing down the interior of your defense. And while Milwaukee wasn't the best regular season team, maybe, just maybe, because we've seen this before, they are a better postseason team than they are regular season team. And we're sitting here right now thinking that. You know, so all of those things kind of factor into your thought process. And by the way, you don't have a lot of time to really prepare for all of this. You don't. You don't have a lot of time to prepare for all of this because, you know, Milwaukee isn't needed to give you a heads up on the injury report until day of game of who's available. And what happens if you see Giannis and Damian Lillard are available? Like, it changes everything in the series. And so that makes it even more glaring about Game 5. But in my opinion, you know, I still feel like the Pacers have to get it done in Game 6. And we're having a totally different conversation going to Game 7 if they happen to lose Game 6. I mean, seriously, it would change a lot. It absolutely would. So those are all the things, the factors that, again, is a deal with all of this. So, all right, we're going to step aside, come back. Pat Boylan, Pacers Radio, going to join us, talk all about this, and maybe a little Fever Media Day coming your way next. Back at it on the Power Talk of Muncie, WMUN, is always brought to you by State Farm agent Jason May. Make sure you get all the discounts you deserve by calling Jason at 747-7100 today. Well, I'll tell you this. I don't think there's many people busier than Pat Boylan from the Pacers and Fever Networks. It's crossover season. The first time in a little bit of time there, Pat. Let's start with the Fever and we'll get to the Pacers. That's been the hot topic today, of course. Fever Media Day, a little different this year than in past years. How has it felt and how has the day gone today?
Well, I think it's safe to say that each and everything that involves the Indiana Fever right now, at least in my world and just about anybody's world, I think that interacts with them, is just so dramatically different from any previous year. I mean, it's a completely different ballgame with, Caitlin Clark and the spotlight that she brings. And so, even a day like today, you see just about every media outlet within a 90-mile radius is here. Plenty of other joining on Zoom. I mean, just the attention that has been around the Indiana Fever for the last couple of weeks has been massive. In a lot of ways, it's felt like it does covering the Pacers, and in a lot of ways it's felt like covering the Pacers even at some of the peak of their popularity since I've been here. So it's been really cool to be a part of. I had the chance to sit down with Caitlin for the first time today, which was good. Didn't get to meet her outside of a quick handshake when we introduced her here a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, she is here. She is here for training camp. She is here for the long haul. And their first preseason game, in fact, is on Friday, which is hard to believe because the women's season just ended. It seems like just a couple days ago she was playing in that championship game. But they'll play their first preseason game in Dallas on Friday.
That's wild. It absolutely is. And so as soon, and we're hoping, it's a long run for the Pacers. Not done yet, of course. You hop right over to that and the two coincide with one another. Well, let's go to last night. I think it caught a lot of people by surprise, and in a lot of ways, if you watched enough sports and you see teams that are down and they have a game and game five where they're at home or whatever the case may be, like, last night didn't surprise me in a lot of ways of the winning team and how they fought elimination. Now, I think it surprised people from, if you just look at game four and game five next to one another, it looked like two different Pacers teams. What stood out to you?
Well, I think this Milwaukee team, even without Giannis and Lillard, who are two of the best and better players in the game, I think they still got the talent and the experience to be a more than capable team. I think this is probably a team that, has a chance to fight for a playoff berth even without those two if they played an entire season. And so dropping game five, disappointing because it was a real opportunity to lock down this series, to even get a couple days of rest, depending, maybe even a few more than that, depending on how this Knicks and 76ers series goes. And, the other aspect at play here, the elephant in the room, is are Giannis and Lillard coming back at some point? So you had a chance to close out the series without those guys. And do they play on Thursday here? I don't know. I'm skeptical of that, but I don't know. But either way, it was a missed opportunity. That said, you put yourself in a position here where you gave yourself three opportunities. You don't want to have to use all three, but you've got them there because of how well you played at the beginning of the series. So I think the way that the game went was undoubtedly disappointing. That's a roster that I think you feel like, I think by no means was it embarrassing to lose to that team at home with that experience, that grit, that crowd. They played like their backs were against the wall, and they played really well. So losing that, I don't think was necessarily overly problematic or anything like that. But the way that the game went, certainly disappointing. I think it's one of those where you feel like at minimum you should give yourself a chance at the end, and the Pacers did not have that. And I guess the only other thing that I would add is just doing some research after the game, it actually kind of surprised me and maybe makes a Pacers fan feel a little bit better about this. Frankly, how many times that this has happened over the course of some really good Pacers teams, and what I'm getting at here is when you play a long playoff series against teams, these games, they do happen. In fact, the Pacers have had 13 20-point losses over the course of their NBA franchise history. Eight of those games were not series and season-ending games. And of the eight times that the Pacers have lost by 20 or more, the next game they were 6-2. So even if you look at some of those really good Pacers teams, whether you're talking the early 2010s, the 1990s, you can find games like this in the middle of series that they went on to win and have very successful seasons in. The key is how they bounce back. Historically, they bounce back very well. If there's been one challenge this team has faced, it's been, maybe playing down to the level of their competition or sustaining success, which I think was a challenge last night. But if there's been one strength of this team, it's overcoming adversity and playing up to the big moment. And the Pacers this year are 13-5 when they've lost a game by double digits. So that's fantastic. They lost a game by double digits. We'll see if they can move that to 14-5 and take the series tomorrow.
From the Pacers Radio Network, it's Pat Boylan on the Power Hour, talking Muncie, WMUN. I'm going to go to what I think has been more troublesome, and honestly, you never really focus on this when you're winning, and it's been the conversation all year long, and it's defensively. You know, I thought last night nobody expected them in back-to-back games to hit 23 threes. That's what they did in Game 4. They hit 12 last night. They had a ridiculous shooting performance and a lot of those good looks, and it fed on both ends of the floor. But if you go back to Game 3 with a roster that is pretty much the same of what you played last night, Damian Lillard wasn't in the game late. One-on-one defensively, you know, it was mostly Chris Middleton, but others made shots as well. The one-on-one on-ball defense wasn't very good in Game 3. You just happened to make one more play than they did down the stretch. That was a back-and-forth game. And what was glaring wasn't really as much offensively last night. You scored 92 points. But I thought defensively was a little worrisome in some of the matchups with this particular roster for Milwaukee. What do you make of the Pacers defensively? What adjustments can they make? Because it's like, if it's team defense-wise and you're seeing some of these miscues, like, do you just say defend harder? Like, in your thoughts, Pat, was that something that stood out to you as well?
Yeah, and I think one thing about, you know, this current iteration of this Pacers team in the playoffs here and in games that matter where the games slow down a little bit is that those two things are connected more than maybe we saw at the beginning of the year when the Pacers were having games where they might win 140 to 135. When the offense is I think what's happening is when the offense is not performing at peak levels, it's affecting the defense more than you would like. And yeah, that's frustrating. There were stretches in the second and third quarter where they just couldn't get a stop, and they were hitting shots. They went through a real lull in the second quarter, but then they got it together offensively, and they just couldn't string together the defensive stops. In general, I think they have played better at home. You're right, the way Game 3, you know, kind of went in the third and the fourth quarter, there definitely could have and probably should have been improvement there. But I think they played well enough to win in those games. And, you know, to be honest, it's a young team that I think maybe just looked a little bit rattled last night. And so I think as you get back home, that will help a lot. I think home court advantage for this version of this Pacers team is maybe more important. You know, they got Game 3. They got Game 4. You look at that game against Miami, which was almost a de facto playoff game. They got that one. They needed to beat Atlanta to lock in a playoff spot. They got that one. So important games here at the Fieldhouse, especially lately, have gone well for the Pacers. They've had the right attention to detail. They've been able to be triumphant. Now, can that carry over into game number 6 with a much bigger spotlight? And, you know, you win this game, you move on to the second round. If you lose it, you still got a shot. But nobody wants to go back to Milwaukee and try to win a game 7. And when you do that, if that does come into play, you give, again, Giannis and Lillard 2 more days to get healthy. And it's a massive mystery where those guys are from a health perspective. But one thing that's undeniable is that they're getting closer. They're closer today than they were 2 days ago. They'll be closer 2 days from now than they are today. And so it's just something you don't want to mess with. And so you've got a young team that got more experience with Pascal Siakam, but it's still the inexperienced squad here. And do they have enough experience to close out a team, even a shorthanded team like the Bucks? Lopez, Middleton, Beverly, these guys have played in tons of playoff games throughout their career. Bobby Portis. And so that's the experience advantage. I thought that experience really showed in games 1 and in games 5 of this series, which, of course, were the 2 Milwaukee wins.
Pat, again, offensively, sometimes it's things you can't explain. And I thought last night the looks maybe weren't as crisp as Game 4, but I mean, there's not a lot of difference. If you're looking at the eye test, like, Pacers were getting pretty darn good looks. Now, I thought when they were searching for a shot to break a run in the second quarter, as you mentioned, it was a little bit more one-on-one. However, Pacers had more assists in the game than Milwaukee did, and Milwaukee won by 23 points. They outscored the Pacers by 8 points from the free throw line. So it's like, there's not a huge disparity there. They were moving the basketball. They were hitting some shots, but it was just big stretches where they couldn't. Anything you see adjustment-wise that really changed offensively for the Pacers, or is that a credit to the Milwaukee defense?
Yeah, I tend to think it's a credit to the Milwaukee defense. I tend to think it's a credit to the Milwaukee environment, the Milwaukee experience. And again, the Pacers just look, I think crisp is a good word for it. They didn't look out of place offensively, but when you look at games one and games five, they just maybe felt a little rattled. They maybe weren't knocking down the shots at the level that they were, and it felt like the offense was close. Like the whole night, save the first quarter when the shots were really going in, the whole night last night I'm watching going, they're really close to being where they need to be offensively, and if they could get over that hump, they could have a real offensive breakthrough. We've seen this team put up massive the number of points in short periods of time all season long. It felt like they were right on the cusp of that. They just couldn't quite get there. And so, again, I think that's something that home court helps with. I think, you know, it's no surprise that when the Pacers have been in those moments in this series for the most part, that they've come in these road series. I think it's important that they find the balance between, look, they can oftentimes get pretty good three-point shooters, decent looks, but that doesn't always mean it's the best shot for that possession. If it's early in the shot clock, for example, can you get a better shot? And to not fall in love too much with the three-point shot, to be able to attack the paint and get inside and get good looks inside. This is a Pacers team that led the league in points in the paint, which I think may surprise some people during the regular season. The points in the paint numbers haven't been there during the playoffs, and the three-point shot has come and gone. So when you're not able to score in the paint at the level you're used to, well, when the three-point shot's falling, like it was in game number four, like it was in game number two, like it was to start game number three, you look like a pretty good team. If the three-point shot isn't falling and you aren't getting inside, I think that's when you're seeing some of the struggles. So, I by no means have any business anywhere near a coaching room, but just from my perspective, I'd like to see them continue to attack, continue to try to get 2 feet in the paint. And typically when they do, good things have happened for this team.
Pat, the final one is this, and you alluded to it, the mystery that surrounds the two stars for the Bucks as you head to game six. And look, the Pacers won two of the three games that Damian Lillard played the majority of the game. So if he comes back and Giannis does not, I don't know if you're caught off guard. Describe to me of what you learned of, every game, I'm sure in the back of your mind, you prepare for Giannis maybe coming back, but this one probably being the biggest one because it's the latest game in the series. And as you mentioned, time might get him on the floor. I mean, he obviously shifts a lot of different things, but how do you in the back of your mind and how is this team prepared for the possibility of him being on the floor and now in game six?
Well, it's a good question because I know going into the series, they absolutely prepared for him to be there. And whether they've been preparing for him to be there every single game or not, I mean, to a degree, I think you do have to do that. But at the same time, it became, at least to me, pretty obvious that this guy was less likely than more likely to go in games 2, 3, and 4 and even 5. And I don't even want to put a number on it because it would be just a kind of a guess right now. But it feels like he's getting closer. Doc's words were that they're both very, very, very close, but he was far from committal on it, and those guys didn't do a ton yesterday. So, to be honest, Mark, I don't totally know the answer. When you ask the coaches and you ask the players, they, of course, tell you that you prepare for everybody being healthy and then you adjust from there. And maybe it is as simple as that, but at the same time, you can't help but feeling like this is a team that's played similar versions of themselves 5 times now, and in the back of your head, that's what you have prepared for because that's what you've played. So if, you know, Giannis does go in game six, which to me, I would say less likely than likely, but certainly not out of the question, that changes things here dramatically. Even if he's not 100%, even if he's not able to go his normal slate of minutes, because it totally changes the dynamic of what you've gotten used to playing against. So even if you prepare for it, the on-court matchups that you've had, which are the real preparation for the next game, he hasn't been there. So it has the chance to throw a real, real wrench into all of this, which is why if you're the Pacers, closing out a series as quickly as possible doesn't take a rocket science to figure out that that's a good thing to do. But especially in this situation, you just don't want to give those guys any time or any hope of coming back. And, you know, their season could have ended yesterday. It didn't. So there's a little bit more mental optimism, perhaps, if you're Lillard or Giannis, and more optimism just from it's two more days to recover. And I'll tell you, I'm eagerly awaiting. In fact, as we've been talking here, I have put you on speaker and checked my text messages to see if we've gotten from our PR staff their initial injury report, because I believe it has to come here very, very soon.
Yeah.
And we'll get a clue. We'll get a decent clue here, I think, within the next 30 minutes or so.
Well, Pat, I know it's been a wild day, wild week. We look forward to following along tomorrow, and just as curious as you are to see how this all plays out tomorrow. Thanks for the time, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir, Mark. Thank you.
That's Pat Boylan from the Pacers Radio Network with us. Man, lots of Pacers stuff today. We're going to get into Ball State sports tomorrow and a lot more in preview game number 6 for Pacers Bucks. All right, back tomorrow at 4. We'll talk to you then.